We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge, Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you make your deposit for a free contest entry today. Derek Van Riper here with Mario Puig. It is week 14 of the NFL season. We're going to take a look quickly at the Vikings-Cardinals game from Thursday night, better than the typical Thursday game, at least. We're going to take a look at the injury report here on this Friday. Also get you ready for the Millionaire Maker, just a $3 entry fee this week. More entries, of course, but different sort of approach for the Millie Maker, so I'm kind of excited about that to get several lineups out there for this week. But we'll start with that Thursday game. Vikings falling just short of getting a big win on the road. Arizona winning this game 23-20. Teddy Bridgewater played pretty well overall, 25 of 36, 335 yards and a TD. No interceptions, did have a fumble on the potential game-tying drive in the fourth quarter. Just didn't feel the pass rush very well. The internal clock didn't seem to be working, and unfortunately that was enough to prevent Blair Walsh from having a chance at a game-tying field goal.
Yeah, I did not expect Teddy Bridgewater to play as well as he did, but you were right. It was kind of alarming how he didn't seem to, particularly when it's a person as enormous as Calais Campbell, you would hope that he would kind of sense the impending destruction there. But, on the other side, no surprise that Arizona looked so good, as always. They look like they could, you know, knock off the Panthers in the NFC. Those two look scary both. But, yeah, David Johnson, emerging at running back. I don't know what reason they have to not start that guy the rest of the way. I know Chris Johnson was playing well and Andre Ellington's explosive, but this guy's such a good receiver and he's like 225 pounds. Looked good yesterday as he did the week before. So, yeah, I did not have any shares of Cardinals this year, but it's that's disappointing, obviously.
I was surprised that David Johnson even yielded anything to Kerwin Williams, but a minor injury actually caused him to leave the game briefly. Kerwin Williams looks like a non-NFL player, to be completely honest about where he's at this point.
Are you sure it wasn't Stephen Taylor that you were seeing rather than Kerwin? Because I'm a bit of a Kerwin apologist, but Stephen Taylor, on the other hand, I think just does not belong anywhere near the NFL. But yeah, anyway, it was probably the injury because, yeah, he's been very good consistently in the last 2 weeks. He's looked like a three down, you know, viable starter.
So I'm trying to figure out what Arizona's defense is all about. It definitely was Kerwin Williams, 6 carries, 2 yards, a long of 7. So
oof. Okay, well, five, I'm apologizing for that.
5 for -5 outside of that long of 7.
Kerwin.
The Arizona defense played well in that they bottled up Adrian Peterson, 23 carries, 69 yards, and a TD, but a costly fumble. AP's had some trouble hanging onto the ball this season. They don't use him.
His whole career, really, he's been a fumbler. It's just he's so good when he doesn't fumble, you don't care.
Well, yeah, and he's not coached by Tom Coughlin, but he doesn't catch many passes. That's still kind of par for the course. So 85 total yards from scrimmage, a TD, a good performance nonetheless. But did Arizona really just sell it to stop the run, and is that ultimately why Bridgewater had such a seemingly good game through the air?
Well, that would make sense, and it's, I think both of us would do exactly that if we were going against Minnesota. So that could be the case. It's just hard to explain why Bridgewater wouldn't have done a little better in the games before this one, when that game plan, I'm sure, is the approach of every single defense that faces the Vikings.
Stephon Diggs, he continues to be quiet. 2 catches, 12 yards, 7 targets. I think it's really a function of getting a lot more attention from opposing defenses than he was earlier in the season. What do you think the next few games, I mean, the next 3 weeks, next 2 weeks matter for season-long players, but what do those weeks hold for Diggs? Because he went from a guy who at one point looked like he was taking over this receiving core, maybe he still will, to someone that is really kind of a borderline like wide receiver 3 or even a flex consideration on a week-to-week basis right now.
It was weird that he didn't do anything yesterday when Bridgewater otherwise improved, but I you look at the target numbers with him, and they're not quite as high as they were in that 4-game stretch back like September, October, when he was really hot. And but yesterday he had 7 targets, just caught 2 for 12 yards. You would think he has to finish stronger than he's been in the last 6 weeks or so, but it's just hard to feel like Teddy Bridgewater is going to do any particular thing on a predictable basis.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you there. Now, Kyle Rudolph led the way, 6 catches, 67 yards on 6 targets. Jairus Wright, 5 for 51 on 6 targets. It was Mike Wallace hauling in Bridgewater's only TD pass, 3 for 42 on 5 targets. So a whole lot of non-valuable contributions, really, in more standard formats. On the Cardinals side, in the passing game, it was Carson Palmer going 25-35, 310 yards, 2 TDs. Michael Floyd, 5 catches, 102 yards, and a score on 9 targets. Scoring on a long TD, thanks in large part to a huge block from Larry Fitzgerald, who, frankly, kind of just does everything at this point. I mean, he's one of the best receivers, I think, in terms of real football, even though the value in fantasy is more like a top 12, top 15 type. I mean, this Arizona passing game is so dangerous because they have 3 guys that are all quality playmakers. You've got Floyd and Brown. Floyd's got the size and speed combo that like typical freak top-end receivers have. Brown has speed that's even faster than that, even though he's a bit smaller. And Fitzgerald, for his age, is still a very good player.
Yeah, Fitzgerald's a Hall of Famer. That was an awesome play. Not just the block, but I didn't know Floyd had that extra gear that he showed, too. I mean, you always knew he was fast for someone who's 220 pounds, but he looked he seemed to just kind of like hit a totally different velocity than everyone on the field there. So yeah, there's no reason to think that passing game is going to slow down, especially if all 3 of those guys are healthy.
So we've got a lot of injuries to run through here. It's, you know, week 14 after all, so players are pretty banged up at this point. Not a huge surprise the injury report is heavier now than it was earlier in the year. Some good news from the Eagles. You've got Ryan Matthews listed as probable to play against the Bills. The only downside there is we really don't know what they're going to do with the carries. It's a revenge game in the sense that you've got Shady McCoy going up against his former team. You've got DeMarco Murray as the guy that Chip Kelly sought out to replace Shady McCoy. Chip Kelly still strikes me as the kind of guy, like most people, who wants to prove himself right. So I could see DeMarco Murray coming out of relative nowhere, which is weird to think, to get 15 or 20 carries and actually have a pretty heavy volume. But the return of Ryan Matthews makes actually predicting that a lot more dicey.
Yeah, and as much as Chip Kelly might want to prove himself right, I think he kind of showed that he was perhaps willing to be pragmatic in the last game when he gave Kenyon Barner more carries than he did DeMarco Murray. So that moment said that that indicated to me anyway that if Murray continues to be clearly a misfit in the scheme, he will leave him on the shelf. Because Murray just is a north-south guy. There's too many play calls in that offense that drag the run to the outside, and Murray just isn't very good at that.
Get the rags ready. Jag injury updates here. TJ Yeldon was added to the Friday injury report with a groin injury. He's listed as probable to play against the Colts. Doesn't look like anything that's going to keep him out of that matchup. Jacksonville will also have Allen Hurns back. He missed last week's game with a thigh injury. Actually was put on the this is weird. He missed last week's game with a concussion, but popped up on the injury report this week with a thigh injury, which is very kind of unusual. My question with Allen Hurns, though, is do you expect him to see the same types of targets he was seeing pre-injury? Because Julius Thomas was banged up throughout this year. Now that Thomas is healthy, I feel like that run of Hurns scoring every week, that was going to come to an end anyway. But I think the chances for him to continue producing even a TD every other game are gradually beginning to fall.
Well, it looks like they were on the field at the same time in weeks 12, they being Julius Thomas and Allen Hurns, in weeks 12 and 13. Over those two games in which, let's look up Blake Bortles' pass attempt count over those two, just so we can kind of get like a relative perspective on it. Sorry, just a second. 12 and 13, and we're talking 85 pass attempts, so that's a lot. That's more than usual. But in any case, 15 targets for Julius Thomas and there was one game, I guess, there, and it was 9 targets for Hurns in that game, 10 for Julius Thomas. So I think there's room for them to coexist, but I guess I would expect Allen Robinson to get his target volume scaled back a little bit. It's sky high right now, and it can lose a little bit and still remain very high. So I think that'll happen, because Hurns is averaging almost like 10 yards a target this year. He's someone they got to keep giving the ball.
Oh yeah, he's going to be the first option for Blake Bortles on pretty much every play. So I think that's something that you're going to see continues, like something 10, 12, maybe even 14 targets a game for Robinson. Maybe he loses a couple here and there with everybody getting back to health. The Bears are a little bit banged up in their group of pass catchers, more specifically at tight end. Martellus Bennett, of course, hitting IR earlier in the week. But even Zach Miller, the backup tight end, who's now the starter, has a rib injury. He is listed as questionable to play against the Redskins.
Lovely.
I mean, there would be some punt play appeal at tight end if Miller is able to play in that matchup against Washington.
Yeah, I have no idea what to make of that injury report, but Zach Miller is actually, he's been a productive pass catcher in the NFL. Started with the Jaguars, not as a starter, but he began his career with the Jaguars. Had a ton of injury issues, has always been injury prone, but he's really athletic. If he's on the field, I think you have to like him in that one. There's a few other cheap, at least on DraftKings this week, there's other cheap options at tight end. So I might kind of lean more toward Austin Seferian Jenkins than Zach Miller, just because of the injury being the tiebreaker there.
No Kendall Wright for the Titans this week against the Jets. You're probably going to see a lot of Darrell Revis on Dorial Green-Beckham in that particular matchup, as Revis should be ready to roll for the Jets. Julian Edelman was back on the practice field Friday. He's not going to play in week 14, but maybe we'll see him back perhaps 2 weeks from now. The big news, of course, out of Patriots camp this week, Rob Gronkowski back on the practice field Thursday. He's officially questionable to play on Sunday night against Houston. I'm a little bit hesitant to say that he's ready to roll, because I feel like the Patriots are going to err on the side of caution, given that they're going to win their division. whether the seed still matters a lot, because you want to position yourself ideally to have a bye. And if you're the 2 seed this year, you probably miss the Steelers right away in round two if the Steelers can win their playoff opener, which would be a good thing. Really, you don't want to be the 3 seed and have to play Pittsburgh first.
Yeah, and excuse me, with Gronk, he was wearing a knee brace at the practice. So with him calling that a bruise initially, I don't know what you would need a brace for. Like, there's a brace is for like structural support. That obviously doesn't do anything for a bruise. So it seems like he was dealing with more of a sprain. And in that case, you would expect him to miss more than one game. So I also don't see any reason why they should rush him back, at least you know, when we're talking about this type of an opponent in a context where the stakes aren't really that high.
Perhaps another week to utilize Scott Chandler in both season long and on DraftKings. The Redskins are going to have Pierre Thomas potentially replacing Chris Thompson in the lineup this week. We'll see if Thomas is actually active. He signed a contract with Washington here at the end of the week. Thompson is dealing with a torn labrum in his shoulder. I would think that maybe Thompson's season is over, but they have not said as much. So for now, that's sort of ambiguous. No Carlos Hyde this week. Not a big surprise. Sean Drawn gets another start against the Browns. Brandon Cooks, who they thought maybe had suffered a concussion during practice on Thursday, is officially listed as probable to play Sunday against the Bucks. This is kind of where things stand. Head coach Sean Payton said that Cooks was held at a Thursday's practice as a precaution after experiencing some dizziness during Wednesday's practice. So a lot of confusion about what happened and when, but it was a practice week issue. Cooks fully practiced on Friday, so really it looked like the Saints were just treating some symptoms and not really dealing with an actual concussion, or at least not a diagnosed one,
from
what we can tell. So any hope that Brandon Coleman would emerge to be useful this week probably gets dashed, because it sounds like Brandon Cooks is going to play in this one. Heath Miller, probable the rib injury, not a whole lot of value there, just getting the Steelers offense even closer to full strength. I mean, what that may do is it may chip away at the targets of Marcus Wheaton, who's been surprisingly productive here in recent weeks. Julio Jones has been kind of hampered by a knee injury. He's listed as probable for that matchup against Josh Norman and the Panthers. Probably not much to worry about there physically, but you do wonder what kind of line he can put together against what has become arguably the league's top cover corner this season. CJ Anderson and Ronnie Hillman both banged up, Mario. Coach Gary Kubiak saying Friday that Hillman looks fine with that foot injury and he will start at running back Sunday against the Raiders. Could see a little bit more Juwan Thompson, though, this week, because CJ Anderson seems to be legitimately questionable. Kubiak saying that Anderson is still, quote, really sore. So I think given the scientific nature of that diagnosis, I'm going to go ahead and say there's a better than 50% chance that CJ Anderson gets some rest here in week 14.
Yeah, I don't see CJ Anderson playing either. I don't know what to make of the Hillman situation. I mean, he practiced today, and it looks like he was kind of, you know, resting absences prior to today, as opposed to someone who was truly on the shelf until today. But yeah, who knows what's going to happen with that. I think you have to like Hillman quite a bit in season long, but maybe in daily the prospects of Thompson getting in there might limit Hillman to more of like a GPP consideration, I guess.
Now, I know when you are drinking your annual, or I should say your weekly case of beer on Sunday, you're going to be watching.
That's like bi-weekly, something like
that. Twice weekly or every other week?
Two times in a week, I guess.
That's why I don't like bi-weekly.
I screwed that up probably. Bi-weekly
No, it's both. It's ambiguous. It's a stupid thing. Like it could be every other week or it could be twice in 1 week.
Okay. Let's contemplate this and figure out a new word if necessary. But yes, two
times a week. Got it. So you're gonna have your case of beer open on Sunday. You're probably gonna be watching the game on the front lawn, I'm guessing, and it's gonna be the Browns, I assume, because they're playing San Francisco. This game means absolutely nothing other than, you know, draft position implications.
Manziel fan club is active that day.
Exactly. It's the Johnny Manziel fan club. Here are the weapons he should have. Gary Barnage expected to play. He's been dealing with an ankle injury. Brian Hartline also expected to play. He's been dealing with a hip injury. And Travis Benjamin should be good to go. He's been dealing with a shoulder injury. So it looks like a pretty healthy complement of pass catchers are going to be at the disposal of one Johnny Football in week 14.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of his personal situation or his standing within, you know, the weird political situation with the Browns, but I still do believe in Johnny Manziel's skill set. So I do think that this is a situation where he should be able to perform okay. But it's also one of those things where it's like, do we really even like, is Mike Pettine going to allow that offense to run the same way it does with McCown, where they're just airing it out recklessly? It seems like they, you know, there's the risk of them scaling it back because of the just preconceived idea, like, oh, he can't handle as much or whatever. So I'm not getting my hopes super high for fantasy. But as it turns out, he's 5,000 on DraftKings, so that's obviously quite low for a quarterback going against the 49ers with dual threat abilities.
I will admit this is a recycled comment only because at least one person listening, hi mom, probably has heard this before from me, but I would throw out my arm if Mike Pettine were inside of a dunk tank at a carnival and softballs were 3 for $5, I would either throw up my arm or throw myself into bankruptcy, putting Mike Pettine repeatedly into a dunk tank.
For charity. That's nice of you.
Right. I would tear my own labrum for charity.
Yeah, that's how you should frame it. But I don't know what I honestly find the Browns just boring at this point. It's like the skirmishes they get into are so petty and like uninteresting that I'm just trying to fast forward through that whole era. But yeah, I hope they let Johnny Manziel like actually run that offense. That's all I'm asking of Pettine. Like, just please let him try to succeed here.
I want Mark Cuban to buy the Browns. That's like the only thing that could save them.
Yeah, it's hard to find a downgrade to the current leadership. Like it's just a circus.
I just think Cuban would do a lot of things to fix it. Like he'd look at it and he's like, we're blowing this thing up. I mean, we're going to start over. We're gonna get rid of these stupid plain helmets and these ugly colors and this losing attitude. Like he's just going to completely redo everything.
Either we change the name or we change the color of the helmets. An orange helmet doesn't make sense.
Or put a logo on it already. I mean, yeah. The plain helmet's not working for you, Cleveland. You got to do something. Lions had a couple injuries in their receiving core to mention. Kelvin Johnson expected to play against the Rams, even though he didn't practice Friday and is listed as questionable. I'm a little nervous about that if I've got him going in a season-long playoff matchup. I'm not going to use him on DraftKings this week, even with six or seven lineups.
Well, I mean, if we can get confirmation that he's playing at a time where you can actually, you know, where it's useful information, that changes things because Janoris Jenkins is out, I think, for the Rams. And on some level, we're just, you know, not worried about Calvin Johnson in any particular matchup as long as he's playing. Also, Robert Quinn, the defensive end, will not be playing. He's on IR. Hmm. He's their best pass rusher on the edge. Obviously, Aaron Donald's the best guy on the inside. But, yeah, I mean, if Calvin Johnson's in, I do like him a little bit. But I guess, like you, I'm more inclined to go with what I perceive to be safer options and the similar tiers.
You know what? I think I might have one entry with Calvin Johnson in it then. You've talked me into it, Mario. After I score the
passionate
brisket.
Passionate defense for well, yeah, Calvin Johnson.
Very passionate. No, very logical, though, with Janoris Jenkins missing this one or likely to miss this one at least. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to score the brisket. Get into the slow cooker, you know, scoring, of course, and you like, kind of cut like little, like kind of slits into it so it absorbs the juices and everything. Get that in there probably by 9:30 Eastern time and then just camp out in front of my laptop for about 12 hours while the brisket cooks and while the games are going on. And that's
just get mad
and just be angry all day. But I'm going to eat the entire brisket. Like that's the...
Take it out on the brisket.
I'm making 2 days worth, but I'm going to eat it all in one day because that's what we do in America.
Absolutely.
Lance Moore listed as questionable. Actually, no one cares about Lance Moore and his health status.
What team does he play for now? I actually don't know who he plays for.
No, he's a Lion. He's the other one. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if he was in Pittsburgh or something.
No, he's the other pass catcher for the Lions who's in some question
good
for
pickup.
This week. Yeah, great pickup. Charles Clay, probable to play against the Eagles. Shouldn't be any problem there. Business as usual for him. Maybe that game comes out a little more high scoring than some people are expecting. The thing about the game last week, though, for the Eagles, when they went into Foxborough and beat the Patriots, I mean, return TDs, defensive touchdowns, it wasn't as though the Eagles' offense was vintage Chip Kelly at Oregon. You know, it's still a problem.
Yeah, I don't mean to put down Kenyon Barner, but if you end up in a situation where Kenyon Barner is, you know, one of your lead ball carriers in a game like that, clearly you're a little short on conventional answers at this point. So I don't expect Philadelphia to have any particular particularly reliable traits on offense. They're probably going to be up and down. The defense is always aggressive, has been making turnovers the last couple of years, but I guess I don't know. It just seems like they don't have a good enough players on offense to be good reliably.
I'll sign off on that. Ty Montgomery, questionable to play against the Cowboys on Sunday. He's dealing with an ankle injury, was limited in practice all week. Seems to have an actual chance at coming back, even though Mike McCarthy hinted just a week or so ago that Montgomery may not be back at all this season. Again, the key for me is that Montgomery can run really fast and run in straight lines and maybe manipulate a safety a little bit. If that happens, I think that could change things a bit for the Packers offense, but we'll see if he actually suits up. Something to keep an eye on nonetheless. The 49ers, oh boy, what a disaster. Vance McDonald, I mentioned Carlos Hyde earlier. Vance McDonald's also out this week. He's got a concussion. Really? Nice. So Blake Bell may be getting some looks from Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, Blaine Gabbert has been throwing to the tight end, pretty much just the tight end and Sean Drahn, who, by the way, I up until like a week ago, I thought Sean Drahn was Ruben Drones. I was confused.
Same guy?
Yeah, because like people say Sean Drone sometimes. I don't know how his name is actually pronounced, but I was just like, oh, that guy Ruben Drones is back. But I just figured it out like a week ago. I'm really stupid. Anyway, that offense is pretty bad looking, but the usage seems kind of predictable at least.
Yeah, I could see Blake Bell getting some targets. At least if you're in a two tight end league, he'd be a guy to think about picking up who could be of some value for week 14. Cecil Shorts and DeAndre Hopkins, both probable to play in that game against New England. So it looks like Brian Hoyer will have his top two wideouts available. Oh, I mentioned this. I forgot to mention this as part of the other San Francisco injuries. Torrey Smith actually questionable with that back injury. I don't think he's really anyone people are relying on, but just want to throw it out there in case that happens to be a situation you're facing. Matt Hasselbeck, probable to play against the Jags. What about Hasselbeck as a GPP play, just given how terrible Jacksonville's secondary has been this year?
Well, I don't know what to make of Hasselbeck's actual condition right now. I mean, it sounds like he was pretty messed up last week, and he played like crap, so that would perhaps be attributed to the injuries that he was dealing with. But, I mean, neck and back injury for a guy who's 40 years old and just looked awful last week. Obviously you're going to have a low ownership, but I'm not sure I see the probability of any good stats coming out of that.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty reasonable take based on the functionality of the offense. Even though he's had success, the week to week they haven't put up gaudy numbers or anything like that. So I think you get a good result against the Jags, but I don't think he's necessarily going to win the week for you either, on the ceiling being kind of low.
He should be okay because he's got good receivers, obviously, but the Steelers' defense is not very good against the pass, and they just made him a complete mess last week. So, I don't know. There's enough affordable options, but yeah, I'd much rather have Manziel at $5,000 than Hasselbeck at any price.
If you're crazy enough to be using one of the Broncos tight ends, it seems like Owen Daniels may be a little healthier right now than Vernon Davis. Davis questionable due to a concussion, but limited in practice Thursday, Friday. Daniels listed as probable the knee injury. Just look elsewhere for a tight end. Some other good news for the Saints, too. This kind of goes with the Brandon Cooks probable designation. Willie Snead is probable with a calf injury, so it looks like they'll have to rely a lot less on Marcus Colston in that matchup, too, as they match up with the Bucks on Sunday. Amari Cooper is probable with a foot injury. Tywan Jones, you don't care about Tywan Jones, so we'll move on from him. Vincent Jackson, probable with a knee injury. That Bucks-Saints game should be a shootout, but I feel like on DraftKings, I just want to fade both sides. If I have anybody on either side, it might be Doug Martin, perhaps, just because if it goes high, he's
going
to get his
share of yardage. I'm going with a lot
of Doug
Martin, yeah. I mean, at 6,200 in a game like that, I think that the potential for pass yardage is being... I don't even know how people are viewing this game exactly, but I would guess the reflexive assumption of most people is, yeah, like you said, shootout, all kinds of passing yards. Did you see what Kirk Cousins did to the Saints? Jameis Winston's going to do that. But I don't know that the Buccaneers might be more so inclined to just let Doug Martin and Charles Sims kind of do most of the work, because then they can keep their defense off the field. And I mean, you can run on the Saints just as easily as you can pass on them. So Martin's having a big year, obviously. I think this makes sense for him to roll in this one. And I'm also going after, at 2,700, I know he's gimpy coming back from an injury, but Austin Seferian Jenkins at 2,700, I mean, that's an easy, that's I'm going to try to, hedge my assumption that the running game takes precedent for the Buccaneers by going with Seferian Jenkins, because 2,700 and you protect yourself against the possibility of Winston going off by getting some shares of that. I really like him at that tight end spot.
I just think compared to Mike Evans especially, you're going to get a really small ownership number on ASJ, so I like the call there. I don't know what happens if you put a Raven into a wood chipper, but I think we're going to see that happen on Sunday as the Seahawks head to Baltimore. Matt Schaub is listed as questionable. However, Jimmy Clausen is expected to start, at least based on some of the reports I've seen today. He's not going to have Crockett Gilmore available. Gilmore has a back injury. He's listed as doubtful. He didn't practice all week. But Max Williams could be back from a concussion. So you think about Kamar Aiken probably being matched up on Richard Sherman. Somebody has to catch the 20 or 25 pass attempts that Jimmy Clausen puts up. And, I mean, he can probably complete conservatively
at least 7 of them.
Yeah, I was going to say 8, so we're kind of on the same page. Maybe pushes double digits. If he completes 8 passes and only one goes to Kamar Aiken, could the other 7 all go to Max Williams?
Well, I just happened to drop Eric Ebron in the stake league and picked up Max Williams in his place. So that's not exactly a ringing endorsement. I just am so hopeless with Ebron that I was quite. Before that, I was going with Ryan Griffin of the Texans. So obviously, this isn't a useful. This is not relatively useful. But I think Max Williams is a really good prospect. I don't know whether the circumstances he's walking into are something where you want to, assume much. But GPP, I think it makes sense to consider him.
So the thing about the fantasy playoffs that drives me nuts is that you agonize over all of the bottom-end roster decisions, all the things that you wouldn't care about as much during the regular season because there's still plenty of time and it's a coin flip, or maybe you just pick a reason to stick with a guy and you live with it. You go back and forth throughout the weekend or even throughout the entire week with players like that. My example this week is in the Stopa League. I lost Jimmy Graham a few weeks ago. It's a 2 tight end league.
Nice.
I didn't have a good second tight end even then. Now I've got crap. I mean, I've got Kobe Fleener hanging around. He's got Jacksonville this week. Maybe that's okay. Fine. Whatever. It's a half point PPR league. It's a 2 tight end, 12 team league. There's not much out there. So I had Luke Wilson. I picked up Luke Wilson when Graham got hurt. He doesn't really do anything. He's not around much. They just don't use him that much in the offense. Max Williams is available, so I went ahead and picked up Max Williams, but I also picked up Jordan Cameron, who's barely been used, although Dan Campbell keeps saying he wants to see more from Cameron, and more importantly than that, which I think that kind of coach speak is meaningless, the Giants are just as bad as Oakland is against opposing tight ends. So it looks like a good spot, but now I'm just wrestling with this idea that I can't get the Cameron versus Max Williams decision right because I'm overthinking what's going to happen in that Ravens offense with Clausen.
I would go Cameron just because I think that Giants-Dolphins game has the look of a potential high score, and I don't know if there's enough garbage time in the world for a Matt Schaub offense Jimmy Clausen offense to get anywhere against the Seahawks. But I feel like basically your better chance at a fluky touchdown would be Cameron just because of the environment he'll play in.
That was the reasoning I used, but I've got Williams sitting there on my bench.
You don't have any hope either way. I didn't.
No, it's crap. It's a crappy scenario.
Give up.
I forfeit right now. I'm going up against I think Scott Pianowski this week. I'm pretty sure he's won the league twice, so he's wealthier than I am. But
yeah, I think he'll be okay.
It would be nice to get through and win this league.
Maybe Jordan Cameron will undo his season. Who knows?
That would make me very happy because it was among the things I got wrong while going through the NFFC drafts back in late August. Actually, it was early September. It's all kind of a blur to me now. As far as other injuries, this one's kind of interesting. Jarvis Landry limited in practice on Friday with a left knee injury, but with the Dolphins and Giants playing on Monday, probably not something to be overly concerned about. Just be sure on Saturday to double check to see that everything went off without a hitch, and it should be business as usual for Jarvis Landry as the number one receiver in that Dolphins offense come Monday night. We've partnered with our friends at DraftKings to run an exclusive RotoWire fantasy football contest. For the final 4 weeks of the football season, RotoWire podcast listeners can participate against each other and against us as hosts to earn a seat at the RotoWire Fantasy Football Championship in Week 17. The Week 14 qualifier is now live. It's just $5 to enter. The winner takes home $100 and a seat in the Week 17 Championship. Join in the fun now. Sign up at rotowire.com/DraftKings. That's rotowire.com/DraftKings. I mentioned this earlier as part of the intro. The Millionaire Maker, different format. More entries, but a smaller entry fee, Mario. $3 entry fees. I think about 950,000 entries max in total. We'll see if it actually gets up to that point. But kind of a different strategy, because I think when you're talking about five or six times as many entries as normal, some, even more depending on previous entry prices on the Millie Maker, you really have to think about combinations of lineups that are lower owned. I mean, you have to do your best to really kind of pivot away from some of the more obvious sorts of things, and just making sure that you don't end up with an extremely chalky lineup, because there's going to be other people that might have it. With that many entries, there could actually be full overlap, even though the permutations are crazy high in number. So how do you think about your lineups? I mean, do you think, is building blocks go? Do you find a couple quarterbacks you like and then build several lineups with each quarterback? Or do you try to vary everything up kind of from top to bottom just to get a lot of differentiation?
Well, at $3, I mean, I guess you can kind of afford to do the strategy of just, you know, betting on anarchy, like just betting on things that you cannot reason as picks that make sense. But using that as the exact, you know, banking factor, like, oh, maybe just wacky stuff will happen this week. It's the NFL. Stupid things that projections cannot foresee happen every single week. So it's merely betting, you know, just anti-chalk as the policy could pay off. I have no idea what to guess about, you know, the effect of switching from a $20 buy-in to a $3 and greatly increasing the entry pool like that. It's like, with that happening, do you think it's just easier to not make chalky picks just because people will be making more lineups in general and therefore diversifying more, and just be the, you know, the size of the pool also, you know, dictating that people just not make the same picks over and over like they normally would? Because when you get to like your second and third and fourth choices, which is, you know, that's still just 12 out of the $20 that you would normally pay, it's like you're obviously not going to just put the same lineup in every time.
Right. So I think what I might do is I'll build three or four lineups that I really like, and then just mix and match the pieces in the best ways possible to make out my other 5 through 7 lineups, as opposed to trying to have like 7 completely unique combinations of players. I mean, each combination will be unique, but I guess what I'm saying is I don't want to have a portfolio of 70 different players. You know, I want to have 35 players combined a few different ways, or 25 players combined a few different ways over my 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever, however many entries I end up finishing with. I want it to be such that my failure to combine the players I like correctly, I want to minimize the chances of that being a reason why I don't do well.
Yeah, you should definitely, you know, make your projections for the games and the players and be like, these are the people who I think are most likely to score highly. Like, you need to have the highest scores to win. But yeah, I almost wonder if that bigger player pool means that you don't need to worry so much about being chalky, just because people will just buy the price of the buy-in, just kind of, you know, spread out their bets anyway. I don't know. I guess I'm going to kind of just make the picks that I think are the highest scoring projected one, rather than worrying so much about the game theory aspect of it, just because I don't even know how to wrap my head around something like this to begin with.
What do you think for the owner or the user who has the most entries, what do you think their entry total is going to be? Do you think it's going to like be like 10,000 entries for somebody?
I have no idea how to answer that. I don't know.
I just wonder, like, yeah, what's the max going to be?
The thing, like, I can't think of a theoretical reason why it can't just be like almost limitless, you know, up to the threshold of where you can't actually make money if you exceed that buy-in threshold. Yeah, I mean, you're going to see like people with thousands of entries, I would imagine.
So we'll start at the quarterback position, kind of go position by position like we do every week, and Tom Brady maybe gets Gronk back, maybe he doesn't. We're not going to know until pretty late Sunday afternoon or early Sunday evening. I mean, even last week, mostly because the Eagles with those defensive touchdowns, return touchdown, because they opened up a big lead in the second half, Brady slung it 56 times, 312 yards, three TDs, had a rushing touchdown as well. He had 37.8 fantasy points on DraftKings last week. I mean, this game is on the road at Houston. The difference between Brady's home numbers and road numbers this year have been pretty small, so I don't think you have to worry too much about that. Houston's defense, though, has done a pretty good job holding opposing passers in check. For the most part, they've been a decent pass defense this year. I just look at Brady and the Patriots, and especially if Gronk doesn't play, I have no idea what to expect from that offense going up against that Houston defense.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of conclusions we can reach about whatever J.J. Watt's broken hand might affect this game. Like, I would guess he'll probably be about the same player, but obviously if he is not, that would be something that would make it significantly easier for the Patriots to move the ball, because J.J. Watt alone, you're like a third of the way to a good defense. So, if he's limited, that would be good, obviously, but I don't know how to project something like that. I don't know how to project where the touches are going to go in the offense. I think it makes sense to pick Brady just because he seems matchup proof, and if New England scores, it seems almost certain like he's going to have something to do with it. So I don't see anything wrong with picking Brady, but like, you know, Blount versus James White, Amendola, LaFell, whatever, Chandler seems like a fine, easy, you know, open and shut pick. But the receivers and running backs, I just don't know what to do with those.
Here's something you can do. I'm probably going to consider this for at least one lineup. You can put Brady and Gronk together in the same lineup, and it's going to cost you $7,800 for Brady, and it's going to cost you $7,700 for Gronk. So $15,500 for the duo. And if for whatever reason Gronk's not going to play, if he gets ruled out, you'll know before the game starts. You can switch, and you can switch to Beckham. So you got to do this in the flex spot so it all works. You could switch to Beckham at receiver and Eli Manning at quarterback. Like, you could pivot once you find out that Gronk's not going to play. And if Gronk does play, you get a slice of a player that can do a lot of damage who simply may be extremely low owned. So I think that might be one way to go about it. Maybe you still have a lineup with Brady and Chandler in there anyway, but you want to do it in a way where if you're trying to put that combo out there, you have a fallback that you like that costs the same amount of money in terms of a combo, and it's basically Eli with Beckham. It would be Tannehill with like Landry, which doesn't cost anywhere near as much. You can get to mess up something else. Like, I think that might be the only way to actually switch it out to something of similar value.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable, and I do like the I specifically quite like those two alternatives you mentioned. Maybe not Tannehill so much, but I think there's a good chance I'll have Eli Manning and Odell Beckham in more than one of my lineups.
Scrolling down a bit from Brady, though, you got Cam Newton at 7,500. Not really any argument against him. Aaron Rodgers is at 7,000. Maybe the low ownership potential there makes him somewhat appealing, given that we're talking about $3 entries now.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to pick much of Rodgers, because I think the nature of playing against the Cowboys tends to lower a player's ceiling, just because the Cowboys just don't run many plays. The 726 plays is what Dallas has run, which is second lowest in the league behind the Chargers, which is, you know, that's like 130 fewer plays than the Eagles have run. So, I think Rodgers could, you know, he's good enough. It's at Lambeau. Cowboys are going to give the Packers short fields because the Cowboys' offense is hopeless. They have zero hope. They will not move the ball. They'll turn the ball over. So Rodgers should have touchdown opportunities, but I don't know what the odds are of him exceeding like 230 yards passing, because I can see him scoring three times in that amount. And while that could be totally good, you know, to cash pretty high, I guess I'm expecting something like 20 to 23 fantasy points from Rodgers, whereas I think your ambitions in this millionaire maker context are more 30-point range.
I feel like I want to make a $3 hedge against my Stopa league team, because I've got Aaron Rodgers there and I've got Davante Adams on my bench. And I think I should just put Rodgers and Adams in the Millie Maker lineup, because if for some reason they go off, at least I get the Rodgers in the Stopa league, but I won't have Adams in there, you know? So that would make me feel better about getting bumped out of that league if I did really well in the Millie Maker because of Devontae Adams having the best game of his life. And let's be honest, that probably isn't going to happen.
Probably not.
Drew Brees at 6,800 against the Bucks. I think there could be a reasonably high ownership rate there for Brees on the road, at least, if only because the over-under is expected to be pretty high. Maybe I make a lineup with him because of the Cooks and Snead good news that we've seen here on Friday, but I'm not crazy about it. Roethlisberger at 6,800, that could be your highest-owned quarterback, given that it's a high-scoring matchup against the Bengals in a game the Steelers actually need pretty badly to help solidify a playoff spot.
Yeah, I'm looking up Cincinnati's pass defense, and it's actually quite good, but you do get the feeling that a quarterback as good as Roethlisberger in a scheme that's an aggressive passing scheme, Todd Haley runs there, with Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant to throw to, you just feel like those variables make them almost matchup-proof, especially for fantasy considerations. Like, even if they lose this game by 20 points, it's like you're not worried about Roethlisberger and Brown letting you down in any scenario, really. So I can imagine him being pretty highly owned. I don't know how to project, you know, his ownership relative to the other players. I think we agreed before, like, Jameis Winston's going to be way up there because he's cheap and he's going against the Saints. Makes plenty of sense. Tyrod Taylor's really cheap at 5,400 against the Eagles. I think I'm expecting Roethlisberger to kind of be like the fourth or fifth behind, you know, like Newton, Tyrod, maybe Russell Wilson, and, you know, Bortles, something like that. But either way, I think he's totally fine pick for the millionaire maker because I don't think he's going to be like, you know, 28% owned or anything like that.
I do have some fear with Russell Wilson that the game could simply get out of hand and it's the Thomas Rawls show. So I think that might be my only hesitation about going too heavy with shares of Russell Wilson for this week. But I like that the way that lines up against Baltimore. If Baltimore can somehow hang around in that game, I think Wilson could go off yet again. I like Eli. I think Matt Ryan at the same price at 6,100. He's upset a lot of people this year. Disappointing time and time again. If there were ever a game, ever a matchup for him to somehow figure it out, it would be against the Carolina defense. It's actually been a bit more generous to opposing passers than you might realize. I mean, you think about some of the point totals they've allowed in recent weeks. This isn't a shutdown Seattle, like at its peak sort of defense. It's actually a defense that can be vulnerable to a shootout. I'm not just talking about the game last week against the Saints. They've had some points this year where they've allowed 24 plus, and as long as Julio Jones is on the field, I know Josh Norman could maybe keep him quiet, but I kind of tend to err on the side of Julio Jones being able to get the better of that matchup. If that happens, he can drag Matt Ryan along with him, and I think a lot of people are going to stay away.
I you're right that people will stay away. That is for sure. I will be among that group. I just don't know that the structure, the nature of the Atlanta offense is one where a player like Matt Ryan can get you a desirable GPP outcome. Not so much because of the matchup. I almost feel like it doesn't matter what the matchup is. It's just if Julio Jones is not open or they can't complete the pass to Julio Jones, they're resigned to a best case scenario of like a 7 or 8 yard gain to Jacob Tammy or Devontae Freeman. There just is no second receiver in that offense. It's just either it's Julio Jones, an incomplete pass, or a check down. So I don't know if they can create, you know, the aggregate production necessary to get a GPP outcome there. But Julio, I think, makes plenty of sense regardless of the matchup.
Bortles is intriguing at 6,000. I'm not crazy about Stafford at 5,800. The Rams, I don't think they're good, but they can show up from time to time and ugly up a game. Maybe the Lions get a lead and they just run it a lot with Abdullah and Joik Bell and gross. That's just, I don't want anything to do with that. Mariota gets the Jets, 5,700 on the road. I'm not crazy about it, but I'm not necessarily opposed to it.
I'm a little low on Mariota, I guess. I think he's awesome. I think he's on an amazing trajectory for a rookie quarterback, but if Revis is playing, right?
Yeah, so Revis is supposed to play.
Kendall Wright is out.
Kendall Wright.
Yeah, so Kendall Wright is out. Being on the road in the Jets have had some like meltdown games, but outside of those games, they've been pretty good on pass defense, even with some questionable personnel. I mean, Todd Bowles is definitely one of the best defensive coaches in the league. The defensive line can make things a problem. Like, Tennessee's pass blocking has not been very good this year. They're going to have to deal with Leonard Williams, Damon Harrison, Muhammad Wilkerson. So I don't like Mariota so much, and even if I did like the matchup a little more, you have to worry a little bit about the trendy pick there after his amazing game last week.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. Now, Jameis Winston is 5,500 against the Saints. He's at home. That's going to be probably even more owned than Roethlisberger.
It's hard to see that not being the most owned quarterback pick, just because all the projection machines out there are going to say, like, pick Winston. He's so cheap. The matchup cannot go wrong. You worry about a scenario where New Orleans' offense does not do well, and the Buccaneers can just let Martin and Charles Sims take care of everything, which they probably will be able to do in that scenario.
You worry about the game the Saints had against the Texans a few weeks ago as like kind of a warning as far as what that offense might
do. You might get your two first quarter touchdowns, but we're just going to run out the clock after that.
The other quarterbacks that are cheap are kind of a mix of interesting. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick's 5,400. You mentioned Tyrod Taylor earlier at 5,400. Not opposed to building a lineup around him against the Eagles. Hasselbeck at 5,200. I think given the alternatives, I'd probably stay away. But if you want to go a little different, I don't think that's very out of the ordinary. Brian Hoyer, 5,200, home against the Patriots. To me, the Texans are so bad at running the ball without Arian Foster that Brian Hoyer almost has to air it out 35 plus times to beat the Patriots.
Yeah, he threw 43 passes last week. So I think it makes plenty of sense to consider Hoyer in a GPP, especially if you think if you like Brady this week, I think you have to like Hoyer. I mean, he'll probably need to rely on garbage time to some extent, but it should be there. They're not going to run, like you said, or if they do, it's basically just to run out the clock rather than, you know, the expectation of actual production. So I think you have to like Hoyer's chances of going over the 40 pass attempt mark again, and in that case, you have to view him pretty favorably at that price, I think.
Tannehill, Osweiler, both 5,200. Don't think I'll be building around either of them just based on
19 pass attempts for Tannehill last week. Like I know Bill Lazor wasn't running enough, but that's kind of an obnoxious, almost seems like reactionary on the part of the Dolphins leadership, whoever called those shots. Tannehill's big games are always the ones where he has those ridiculous pass attempt numbers. And if you can't bank on that anymore, I don't know what good he is.
Maybe you make one lineup with Tannehill and Landry because 5,200 is cheap and it will open up
Landry
a lot of other possibilities.
Landry for sure is in play. Yeah, him and Devontae Parker both are in play.
Jay Cutler, 5,100. I mean, if Jay could help me win $1 million, he would really be my favorite quarterback of all time.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why he probably won't be your favorite quarterback of all time. He could do okay in this one. I mean, Washington, its personnel in the secondary is not very good, and but on the other hand, it's like if Zach Miller's at all gimpy, Alshon Jeffrey is the only viable target aside from like Matt Forte and Jeremy Langford. So I have a hard time seeing how Cutler would get the volume a player like him would need to give a big return.
Let's move on to the running back position. Devontae Freeman, easily the most expensive option at 7,700. Gets a reasonably tough matchup against Carolina, if only because the Falcons could fall behind in this one. With that, it'd be the Matt Ryan show. But Freeman catches passes, so he wouldn't be completely worthless. It's just interesting to see that there's almost $1,000 difference between Freeman and Matt Forte, along with Todd Gurley, who are both at 6,800. Do any of the top three backs appeal to you? Because the one that maybe I might build at least a lineup or two around actually is Gurley. If the Rams keep that game interesting, Gurley's going to be a big part of the reason why, and I feel like his recent form is leading some people to stay away.
I'm actually a little bit worried about the injuries in the St. Louis defense making the Lions a more viable offense than they would normally be, and if the Lions do get ahead at all, that might be it for Gurley. Like, obviously it's futile for the Rams to try to play catch up, but I think they'll try their best anyway if they should fall behind. Even if it might be more realistic to catch up by just giving it to Gurley 30 times. I probably won't be going with Gurley. I think out of the top three, the most interesting to me is Forte. Kirk Cousins on the road, and I just don't think the Washington defense is actually very good. Forte, however, is really good. And last week, ran for 84 yards on 21 carries, caught 5 passes. He could catch, like, you know, 5 to 8 passes in every single game the rest of the way with Martellus Bennett out. So I actually like Forte quite a lot. But yeah, at the very least, you can bank on those three having pretty low ownership numbers, especially Freeman, I would guess.
I would assume the interest this week is going to be mostly with guys like Doug Martin, home against the Saints at 6,200, Shady in his revenge game going back into Philly at 6,100, D'Angelo Williams at 6,000, which should be a very high-scoring but close game between the Steelers and Bengals. I mean, Jonathan Stewart at 5,800 is reasonable.
Lamar Miller and Thomas Rawls. Actually, as well. So those guys are all pretty good, I think. The Giants' run defense has been okay, but I think Miller is like Lamar Miller is so good that he is close to matchup proof, or at least the Giants aren't good enough to actually slow him down, especially if they stick with him like they have or like they did last week against a tough Baltimore defense, a defense that's certainly tougher against the run than the Giants are. So I like Miller. He's cheap at 5,700. Rawls, it's a similar thing. I mean, it's not a good matchup, but we think Jimmy Clausen is going to give up short fields. So if we think Seattle is going to score, I think Rawls is a great bet to do so. So I really like those two. But yeah, McCoy and Doug Martin are tough to fade, even if chalky, because... Yeah, I really like Martin. I don't think the Buccaneers, I don't think it's really in their nature to willingly get into a shootout. I think they would rather control it on the ground with Martin. But yeah, they're really good options all in that range. D'Angelo Williams, too, obviously, is a very nice player for $6,000.
I'm at least giving some thought to Sharkhandrick West at 5,100, although I'm not sure how exactly the Chiefs are going to carve up the carries between West and Spencer Ware, but you got to love the matchup for the Chiefs going against the Chargers. Home game at Arrowhead, San Diego, it just seems like is really falling apart. But the run defense has been a problem for the Chargers all season long. What about Eddie Lacy? I mean, the Hoagie incident with Mike McCarthy seems to be in the past now, and he's rejuvenated, as we discussed previously.
Highly juvenated at this point.
As juvenated as he can possibly be. You get Lacy at 4,700 in a game that the Packers should be able to handle and win at home against Dallas. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a matter of what you expect the workload to look like. 4,700 seems like the right price. I just don't know how much I trust Mike McCarthy.
If $3 entry in the Millionaire Maker, I like Lacy. If we were still at $20, I'd probably be like, but $3, my lineup's going to suck anyway. Who cares? So yeah, might as well go for Lacy in this context. I think it actually is a good play, though, because Dallas, I'm sure, will, you know, their defense has talent in some areas, especially in the front seven. You do worry about the clock running out because Dallas is such a plodding team. They just run out the clock right away with their running game. But the Dallas defense has to just break in the second half because the offense will just leave them high and dry. No defense can play just, you know, 60 minutes, especially in Green Bay. Against Aaron Rodgers. So I think the Packers will break them in the second half if they don't in the first. And Lacy has to be a favorite to score a touchdown, even in his currently a disgraced state.
Trending further down the list, I mean, you might think Hillman, yeah, 4,700 should have some interest there, especially with C.J. Anderson looking like he's going to have to sit out. James White at 4,100 caught a lot of passes in the fourth quarter of the comeback effort by the Patriots last week.
Yeah, that might be the chalkiest non-chalk play on the slate just because it's that recency bias of him, you know, crashing the party last week. Did he catch 11 passes last week? 10?
Yeah, dry erase board play, James White.
Yeah, so he might be surprisingly highly owned for someone in this price range, but I would not be able to argue against it. I mean, I don't think he's any worse of a prospect than Deion Lewis was, so I don't know why he shouldn't succeed in that role. Oh, 10 catches last week, not 11. Sorry.
So the Eagles have, I think, DeMarco Murray at 5,000, Sproles at 3,500, Ryan Matthews at 3,400. Any of the Eagles running backs, their respective prices, of interest to you against Buffalo?
I think Sproles and Matthews are kind of interesting in a GPP, especially Matthews.
Matthews is really good.
I kind of like Matthews quite a bit at that price, actually. I might have to swap out my Davante Adams flex spot for some Ryan Matthews there. But yeah, I think at that price it makes sense. It's not like a great matchup, but it's just one of those things where we've seen enough wacky game scripts this year, all years really, that somebody like Matthews scoring two touchdowns wouldn't be shocking. And at that price, that's a home run value.
Well, if you are having the kind of weekend where you might be drinking things from underneath the sink, CJ Spiller and Tim Hightower both $3,000. I mean, you could think about them as flex options. You could think about them as punt running back options. If you're going to pick one, would you go Spiller because of his ability as a pass catcher?
Well, Hightower can actually catch too. I don't know how we're supposed to get a read on what exactly the deal is there. I don't think beat writers really know. It's like the most solid thing we've seen on that backfield is, you know, Hightower could be the lead early down back. And it's like, well, what is that based on though? It's like it seems like we're just speculating because it just doesn't look like a reasonable situation, really. Or at least, you know, what's not reasonable is how little Spiller has played before this point, especially given that they, you know, went out of their way to get him this offseason. And he was originally one of the theoretical replacement options for Jimmy Graham, and they just kind of left him on the shelf. So I don't know if he's on bad terms with Sean Payton or if he's just not looking good in practice, but I like Spiller a lot more so because, like, Hightower is not explosive. Like, he can probably pass block, and he can catch passes pretty well. But Spiller is a guy you can – I mean, he already this year had, like, an 80-yard catch for a touchdown. So 3,000, that's very tempting. I'll probably have to get at least one Spiller. I guess I don't feel strongly enough about Hightower to take him over, like, Ryan Matthews if I can afford it.
Yeah, I would agree with the Matthews over Hightower option there, but I do think the idea of making a lineup with C.J. Spiller in it could be a good one. At the receiver position, you got to pay up for the top options. Beckham at 9,100, Antonio Brown at 8,900. Julio even going up against the Panthers and Josh Norman, $8,900. DeAndre Hopkins at 8,500, and then Allen Robinson at 8,000, rounding out the top five. But if you can save money at the other positions, I'm all about building with Beckham and or Brown this week. I mean, I feel like it's just never a bad investment to go after them. And I think in these particular matchups against the Dolphins and Bengals, respectively, you're looking at really high floors, but with ridiculous ceiling that you get with those guys each and every week.
Yeah, Antonio Brown is over 40 DraftKings points in three of his last four games, and the one that he didn't was on the road against Seattle. So, this is not... There's really no matchup for me where Antonio Brown, if Roethlisberger's healthy, Brown's matchup-proof in PPR, it just doesn't matter. And this is a high-stakes game that could turn into a shootout if Dalton doesn't play terribly. So I agree with you. Antonio Brown is a great pick. I really want to get Odell Beckham just because the Giants and the Dolphins are both among the highest tempo teams in the NFL, which in the NFL high tempo doesn't really mean that much, but it's nice to get two teams who are in the leaders of plays run, because you would hope that would, you know, create both just more targets and you know, more garbage time if there should be any. But I think Beckham is basically high floor, high ceiling in this one, and I'm going to have a lot of him this week.
I love me some pace. I'm trying to build out a lineup, and maybe it's possible where I have Beckham, Antonio Brown, and AJ Green. Green's at 7,900, just to go really heavy with those elite receivers and then find those cheap running backs. Maybe it's like a Matthews, CJ Spiller duo where if the two running backs go off, I'm just going to be feeling really good about my chances of cashing in a big way.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And if luckily, not luckily, if you're trying to limit all the distractions, all the distracting alternatives that you could go with, I think you can do the same thing at running back. Go up for McCoy, Martin, something like that. And then at receiver, you got a few bargain targets like Emmanuel Sanders at 5,900. I think is a really good deal. Sammy Watkins at 6,100 is a bit chalky against the Eagles, but I like it a lot because, those corners cannot cover him. They can't. And if that's an up-tempo game, then how do you not like Watkins there? So even with the chalk, I just like his chance for like a 30-point fantasy game. So I'll probably have a bit of Watkins too. But yeah, otherwise, if you can afford it, an Odell Antonio Brown tandem would be pretty sick. So all you need is like CJ Spiller to catch five passes for that to work. So yeah, there's a lot of flexibility with this cap here.
Yeah, if you go Beckham Brown and don't throw an AJ Green, that opens up a lot more flexibility, but I'm definitely going to kick around a few options like that. Mike Evans, Elshon Jeffrey at 7,200 and 6,900, probably going to be among the higher owned receivers. Of course, Evans going up against the Saints, Jeffrey going up against Washington. Do you fade them in the tournaments this week, or do you at least build a couple lineups with them in it? Because, again, we're dealing with $3 entry fees in the Millie Maker instead of 20.
I think it makes sense to have, like, at least some exposure to them, but generally Jeffrey is like the ultimate cash game play this week. I feel like value adjusted, obviously you would prefer Odell and Antonio Brown in a vacuum, But at 6,900, I mean, I feel like with Martellus Bennett out, Jeffrey should probably be like 8,000 or something. So I think he's an enormous value. You just worry about, you know, the ownership numbers loading, and he's like 32% owned or something.
I feel like Evans will be even more owned than Jeffrey, though. So given
the
choice,
that would make sense. The projections must love all the Tampa Bay passing game. Even if I'm a little worried about like the flow of the game limiting their upside a bit, but I obviously Evans is a freak. Winston's playing well, and the Saints just don't do anything on defense. So.
You mentioned Emmanuel Sanders before. I think
5,900.
5,900 is a good price there against Oakland.
And if CJ Anderson's out, there could be more usage to go around in general. And why not to those two receivers, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders?
That's one of the things I like about the Broncos. They don't spread the ball around all that much. Yeah. For me, I think Crabtree at 5,900 is probably someone I stay away from going up against Denver, even though Amari Cooper might draw more Talib. I don't want any part of that Denver defense right now. I do like T.Y. Hilton at 5,900. If you don't want to pay up for Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant continues to be a steal at
5,700. 5,700 for Martavis Bryant is nice. I got to find a way to get him in my lineups.
Willie Snead, 4,400 if you want to get cheap shares of the New Orleans offense, but not crazy about them on the road, even though Tampa can be vulnerable.
What do you think about? Oh, sorry, I did not mean to totally interrupt there. What do you think about Doug Baldwin in the Millionaire Maker? Because he is like cash game lock, I think. But 4,500 with all the highlight reels he's been in the last month, is it worth it at all in a GPP of this size?
See, he's cheap enough where I feel like fading him might be a mistake, because by having him, you just open up so many other interesting possibilities throughout your lineup. But he's the kind of guy that if you're going to build a Beckham-Brown-Jeffrey trio in your receiving core, you might have to throw him into the flex, because the amount of money you're going to have left for each spot once you go the cheap back and a defense is going to be about 4,500. So then you're going to have to go cheap flex, low-end tight end, maybe Austin Seferian-Jenkins, who you talked about before. Go cheap quarterback and then another cheap running back, and that's your lineup. Like that's a good way to get there. I mean, you have to think about some of these sub $5,000 receivers if you're going to try and squeeze in a lot of those top end guys. I mean, the other cheap receivers that are interesting in the GPP context: Davante Adams at 4,200, mostly because everybody hates him now. Anquan Boldin at 4,000 because Blaine Gabbert's throwing him passes. But for 4,000, I mean, what do you need? Boldin to catch 7 balls for 80 yards, and if he were to score, that'd be huge at 4,000. But Devontae Parker is going to be the chalky, low-cost tournament receiver for this week.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of him either, because I think Devontae Parker is a really good prospect. Like I think he's like 90% of AJ Green, and AJ Green is, you know, a good bet to be a top 5 receiver any given year. He's very similar skill set wise. He's just like an inch shorter, probably not as good of an all around athlete when you adjust for size. But he's really good. And last week they didn't throw the ball at all. He still got 63 yards and a touchdown. After catching 4 passes for 80 yards and a touchdown the week before that. I'm totally sold on him as a talent. But Jarvis Landry was very quiet last week. That doesn't seem like something that'll happen 2 weeks in a row. So I think you have to expect Parker's share percentage to drop like a lot. But similarly, I mean, around the other side of that, though, you don't really expect Tannehill to throw for like 130 yards 2 weeks in a row. So there's room for both Landry and Parker. I'm just not sure there's enough for both to be worthwhile in a GPP outcome. And I guess generally I feel like Landry has to get a pretty decent serving this week.
Let's move on to the tight end spot. Now, we talked earlier about combining Brady and Gronk and then being able to just flip it out and go to Beckham and Eli Manning instead, because the cost is such that you'll have enough money under the cap. But again, to do that, Gronk has to be in your flex spot, essentially, unless you've got some other third player that you want to manipulate accordingly. But I think it could make sense to do that, because there are enough cheap tight ends where I feel like I'm getting good value when I plug in 2 tight ends. I mean, you could go Kelsey at 4,700, Julius Thomas at 4,200, Clay at 3,500. There's just plenty of ways to build a lineup that you feel good about that has 2 tight ends in it.
I know it's probably not the most sound tournament strategy, but I have no problem going with a lot of Seferian Jenkins at 2,700. And again, like I said before, I feel like Safarian Jenkins is the perfect way to hedge against the possibility of a big Winston game if you don't otherwise want to invest in that Tampa Bay passing game. He's an obvious red zone target, but he's athletic enough to make plays between the 20s. Got 6 targets last week in his first game back from injury. So I really like Safarian Jenkins, even if a lot of people are going with him. And I'm very intrigued, actually, by the possibility of going 2 tight ends in the flex if Zach Miller is playing. Because if he's playing, I mean, we got to expect him to get like 6 targets at least. And against Washington, I can see that if he holds to his past career averages, that's a pretty good bet for 50, 60 yards and a touchdown on 4 or 5 catches.
And that's at 2,700.
Right. So
that's where I think a lot of these 2 tight end strategies are built. And it only becomes a 2 tight end strategy if Gronk plays, and then you have Gronk at low ownership, which is the best type of Gronk to have. So
it's a very rare Gronk and a good Gronk.
That's a very rare Gronk indeed. Now, I like I said, I don't expect him to play, but right. You should be positioned in a way where you can take advantage of it if he does. That's how I would recommend trying to do it. Olsen at 6,900, never feel real bad about that. Going up against Atlanta, no problems there. Delanie Walker against the Jets, ho-hum on that. Not crazy, not necessarily going to pay up $5,600 for him. When I can get Tyler Eifert for $5,600 in what should, again, be a high-scoring game between the Bengals and Steelers.
He's a really good tournament pick this week because he's just expensive enough that people won't just flock to him, but it's a perfect matchup because, yeah, they got to go to the air in that one.
I think the flocking will probably be to Julius Thomas at 4,200 potentially, and maybe not necessarily. The targets aren't that crazy.
I think Safarian Jenkins is going to be the most owned just because at that price, I mean, that's like a he hasn't played in a month price.
That's what the sharps are going to do. Like the really good tournament players are going to have him, but I don't think the masses are going to gravitate towards Austin Safarian Jenkins.
Really? Huh. I mean,
a lot of smart people.
I hope they don't, because I would much rather have him to myself. It's just I figure, like, you know, optimizers and projection, like projection models that factor projection points versus salary are going to have him at the top values of the week. So I hope you're right, though, because I would much rather have him to myself.
I'm just going to spend all my time building lineups, hedging against my Stopa team. That's all I'm going to do for the next 3 weeks if I play that long, you know, depending on what happens. Maybe one and done in the postseason, but we'll see. Man, it would be nice to like kill off a student loan because of winning a fantasy football league. That'd be
pretty cool.
That'd be a pretty good day.
Yeah,
you know, it'll happen someday. Maybe not this season, but someday it's going to happen. Defenses, okay, look, everyone's going to want to use Seattle, 3,500, probably going up against Jimmy Clausen. Baltimore's bad, even if it's Matt Schaub. I mean, we talk about it a lot. There are certain low-cost plays that just make sense, even though the ownership rates will likely be very high. And I think the Seattle defense might be one of them. Now, your alternatives, the Broncos at 3,400 are at home against Oakland. They could be reasonably like lower owned compared to a typical week. I also like the Packers at home against Matt Castle. The Chiefs against the Chargers I'm a little more lukewarm about, but that's a reasonable spot as well at 3,200. Maybe the Lions at 2,700 against the Rams. I think you brought them up a bit earlier in the show. But what defenses are you most likely to use? Is it the 4 I just mentioned, or is there a fifth one maybe in there?
After thinking about it a bit more throughout the recording here, I've singled out certainly Seattle. I'm going to probably go with them for the most part. But if not them, then Green Bay. Green Bay, where is their stupid price? Okay, $3,200 for Green Bay. They're not exactly cheap, but at home against a Dallas offense that is just hopeless, I like the Packers a bit. But I do want to pay up for the Seahawks if I can at all. And I'm not worried about the ownership so much because defenses are just weird, and it's not the same theory just cannot apply to them as it does positional players. And I feel like this Seahawks scenario is a rare one where it's like, knock on the fake wood table we have here, it seems like it just can't be screwed up. Like, they're going against Jimmy Clausen on a team that probably has the worst skill position players we've seen in, like, I don't know how many years. I mean, it's like worse than the Browns, obviously due to injury, but still, it's so bad. Like, Kamar Aiken is by far their, like, Kamar Aiken and Max Williams might combine for like 20 targets in this game. So yeah, I love the Seahawks. I feel like it should be a certainty, and if it is, that's worth paying for.
I'm shaken by your fake wood comment about our table. Our table,
is it real wood?
It's like either really.
I just assumed it was like really dense cardboard. Or
it might be. If it is, it's extremely heavy for a fake wood table. But man, my world is upside down. But no, I think defensively, yeah, the Ravens skill position players are so bad that it's
like a once a decade type of thing how bad their skill position people are.
It's second time this season Seattle gets a look at Jimmy Clausen too. Last time, I mean, the Bears really turtle shelled it, but still, I can't imagine the Ravens.
Wait, that was when was this?
That was like week four of this year. Oh man, week five.
I thought I was just like dreaming that.
I think Jay and Jeffrey were both hurt, so it was Clausen playing and Martellus Bennett was the really only healthy,
that's right,
quality pass catcher.
Jimmy Clausen he drew the luckiest of straws. Wow, that's amazing. Privilege of playing them as a backup twice in a year on different teams.
On two teams that were depleted by injury at the time, too. Wasn't like he was the only player who was in because of an injury. He was playing with a lot of other second teamers.
Now Jimmy Clausen is basically nothing but a human shield quarterback. He's the guy you sign when it's like, we need a quarterback to just take a beating this week.
Need someone to get out there and just let people come watch us play, because if we don't have someone under center, we can't play the game. That's pretty much what Jimmy Clausen is at this point. Thank you for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you make your deposit for a free contest entry today. If you're enjoying this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, if you could please leave us a nice review, we'd greatly appreciate that. It's like the podcast tip jar that doesn't even require any money. You can also check out RotoWire for free for the next 10 days by going to rotowire.com/pod. Good luck in week 14. Nick and I will be back with you on Monday.
With the helpful hardware folks.
At Ace, your backyard's right in our backyard, which means we have hand-picked products that are right for the birds in your neighborhood, like premium bird seed, suet, birdhouses, and feeders. Stop by your local Ace and get everything you need to attract the birds you want, including Ace Wild Bird Food, on sale now. Now through Tuesday only, when you buy two 20-pound bags of wild bird food, get a third bag free. Only at Ace, the helpful place. Offer valid through February 28th at participating stores.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.